Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
This news hit last night, middle of the evening, that, well, most of the headlines read something like Justice Roberts joins liberal wing of the court in prohibiting the implementation of a Louisiana anti-abortion law. The law itself, called the Unsafe Abortion Protection Act, would have required abortionists in Louisiana to have hospital admitting privileges. It's about the safety of those who visit those abortion clinics and about whether or not those who are doing those abortions are actually qualified to get hospital admitting privileges. It was puzzling. What has the court actually done here, and does it signal anything about the court's future disposition towards such laws as that of Louisiana's Unsafe Abortion Protection Act? Joining us to answer some of those questions, Margot Cleveland, a regular guest. She's an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge. She's adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame and senior contributor for The Federalist. Margot, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much, Todd.
What did we learn in last night's stay or decision there about Chief Justice Roberts and newly minted Justice Kavanaugh?
Well, I actually think that we haven't learned much about their views on things. Unlike, I think, a lot in the media, I'm looking at this as a much more prudential decision of how do we go about deciding issues. And I thought that Justice Kavanaugh did a very nice job in his dissent saying, really, there's no reason for us to stop it because there's time for things to move forward, for the doctors to try to get a attendance at a hospital, be able to admit women to the hospital. And I can talk more about the requirements later. But I read Justice Kavanaugh as very cautious, saying there's really no reason that we need to stop this law from being implemented at this point. If something changes and it's going to change the status quo, we can at that point. And the same with Justice Roberts. I saw, obviously he didn't write an opinion, but I saw that you could look at it from the standpoint of they have filed a request for us, the Supreme Court, to hear this case. And to let that process go forward, we're just going to put a hold on everything else until that happens. So I didn't see this as showing anything about how either of the justices would rule on the merits. It's kind of funny that everyone on the abortion left is saying, Susan Collins, what have you done? Look at Evo Kavanaugh. And it's nothing of the sort. I'm hopeful that Justice Kavanaugh would recognize that Roe was wrongly decided and that he is not going to kind of pull a Justice Kennedy and decide, well, it's been bad law for so long, we'll just let it slide. But I don't think this decision tells us anything.
Then tell us about Act 620 or the Unsafe Abortion Protection Act there in Louisiana.
What this statute requires is for abortion doctors to have admitting privileges at local hospitals. And it has to be a hospital within 30 miles of the abortion clinic. The challenge to this by one of the abortion clinics and several doctors that were named as Doe A through, I think, E, was that this is a burden on women's rights to abortion under Roe and its progeny. And they argue that this causes a substantial burden on access because these doctors won't be able to perform. It's going to close these clinics. And they rely on the Supreme Court case in Whole Women's Health that came out, oh boy, I want to say about 5 years ago, that struck a very similar statute in Texas. And I'm actually looking at the case that was out in 2016, so just a few years ago. They struck a very similar law in Texas. But what the Fifth Circuit, the appellate court, said is Louisiana and Texas are very different. And the three-judge panel in the Fifth Circuit said those differences matter, and we don't see anything showing that this law is going to create a substantial burden at this stage.
I'm curious about, you said this doesn't tell us anything about the courts, because essentially they're saying, let's give it time. We are going to eventually hear this case. Am I understanding that correctly?
Right. And it's not just that we will eventually hear this case, but a petition for certiorari, petition for cert, requesting the Supreme Court to hear this case has been filed. And in this petition, for this petition to be granted, you need four justices to agree to hear the case. And my understanding is that usually in order to get a stay, as the justices did in this case, you need to have a reasonable likelihood that they'll take the case. So I think that this case is going to be going up. And in fact, I think we're in a better situation that they didn't send it back and let it proceed. And let me kind of, this is getting a little bit in the weeds, but it was a very interesting point that Ed Wieland made over at National Review Online and the bench memos. And he made the point that at this point it's coming up as a facial challenge, meaning this law, we don't know exactly what the implications are going to be, but the justices would have to decide that it is unconstitutional on its face without knowing exactly what's going to happen. And that's a harder standard to prove than if you have actually gone through and it's been applied. So it actually might be in a better frame for the Supreme Court to consider it as it is, as opposed to sending it back to see what happens.
So I'm trying to understand that particular aspect.
Sure.
It sounds as though the court is saying, let's see where it goes so that we have a better basis for any possible challenge that may come to us to make a decision.
Right. Well, actually, no, that's what the dissent was making the point of. We don't know whether these doctors will have gotten admitting privileges. So let's take it a step back. That's what the law requires, is that the doctors have admitting privileges. And one of them was denied it, one of them has it, and I think there were three other ones where they really didn't try very hard to get them. And the court said, you need to make a good faith effort. And based on what you've done, we can't say that you're going to be denied admitting privileges. And what the Supreme Court, the court said when they put the stay in issue, was, we're going to decide this case on the merits. So let's just hold everything off until we decide that. And the point I was trying to make is, when the Supreme Court decides it on the merits, they're going to have the facts of what these doctors did and didn't do to get admitting privileges. And it's not going to give them another shot at the apple, so to speak. And if they were denied admitting privileges and then came back to the court and said, see, we told you, it might be a harder case for the state to win.
Do we have any track record on how laws like this that have focused on abortionists being required to get local hospital admitting privileges have fared?
So far we have the Supreme Court case from 2016, and that was again involving Texas. And that established a standard where you balance the law versus the impact on women. And those who are condemning the Louisiana law are basically saying, hey, this is a copycat of that Texas law, and are arguing that it should be stricken down. But there are some pretty significant distinctions between the Texas law and the Louisiana law. So this case is actually going to be the one that is going to give us more guidance from the court. Was Texas just unique because of the impact? I think it closed 40 of 45 abortion clinics, and Texas is such a huge state, it impacted the travel in a way that most other states would not be impacted. So when you say, is there a track record, we only really have that one Supreme Court case that gives us the track record. And this one is going to tell us a little bit more broadly what's going to happen. And at that point, it's also going to tell us more broadly where Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh stand on it.
Margot Cleveland is our guest. We're talking about the Supreme Court's ruling prohibiting the implementation of Louisiana's Unsafe Abortion Protection Act. There's a term that's often used in these cases, undue burden. What does it mean, and how has it been applied? We'll answer those questions after this.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Listen to the best of the Church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
To defend the dignity of every person, I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in a mother's womb.
The picture of the shepherd leading the sheep, right? I mean, that's not at all a look at the sheep saying, look what I'm doing. I'm following my man. It's like, you know, hey, it's the guy that gets us the protection. He's the guy that gives us all of our nourishment. He's the guy that we need to be with to be safe.
And so if we have a universal grace and there is no predestination unto damnation, we can cling just to those universal promises that we're given. Just looking to the cross of Christ, knowing that it's given for us.
Do you see how uncomfortable that would make people in the press to have to cover Feminist for Life? There's the gender issue, but now the weapon of gender and feminism is being used by people on the wrong side of the issue.
In about an hour, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Those 4 soundbites will play for you in their entirety, and after you've listened, your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll also be giving away to the listener with the best vote for Soundbite of the Week, the LPR Bundle Package. That is a Luther Rose Medallion, courtesy of Ad Crusum, the I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, and notepad. That's when we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in an hour. In the meantime, we're talking with Margot Cleveland, an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School, served 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge about the Supreme Court's ruling prohibiting the implementation of Louisiana's Unsafe Abortion Protection Act. Margot, one of the terms we hear a lot in cases like this is undue burden. What does that term mean, and how has it been applied?
So when you're talking about an undue burden, they are looking at whether or not the law is going to have an undue burden on women being able to access an abortion. And they are looking at the specific provisions. So if it is a provision that is requiring extra counseling at a later stage in development, so after the first trimester, then that's the group they're going to look at. They're not going to look at, does it affect access for all women and all abortions? It's just going to look very narrowly at that provision. And they're going to look at things such as what the cost is. Does it impose a substantial increase in cost? Does it increase a health risk to women to undergo the abortion maybe later because of a waiting period? It is going to look at part of what is the motivation. Was this trying to prevent abortions, close down, or was it really done for a legitimate reason as protecting the health of the women undergoing it? So there are a lot of different factors that they look at when there's an undue burden analysis on it.
What does this tell us? I kind of look at these things and wonder whether or not we're seeing a preview or a run-up to a possible post-Roe legislative and judicial circumstance.
Right.
What does it tell us about a post-Roe, where the battle lines will be drawn, where the genuine attempts to make the abortion facility safer for all those who visit it?
So I don't necessarily think that this is going to show us the post-Roe era. What it does show us is that a lot of these things post-Roe would really be left in the state's hands for regulating safety, whether it be the safety of the women undergoing abortions or the safety of the unborn child. I think, frankly, what is showing us more of a post-Roe scenario is what happened in Virginia, or it was attempted in Virginia, and what did happen in New York. And it's pretty ironic that the people who have been screaming for 40 years that if you overturn Roe, you're going to criminalize abortion are the ones who are out there celebrating the passage of New York's law that prevents that permits abortion until birth. That's going to be the case in New York after, if Roe is overturned, absent the federal government coming in and saying, you know what, once we reach 20 weeks, we're not letting states say you can kill those human beings, which I hope happens. And then you're going to see the question of Louisiana's laws, parental consent, those kind of things probably will change by the states.
Two final questions for you, Margo.
Sure.
Make the case that requiring abortionists and physicians to have admitting privileges is kind of a bare minimum that we ought to expect from the abortion industry.
Well, I think that when we talk about abortion, for ages it was a safe, legal, rare scenario. But even when you're seeing the rare thrown out the window, you still would expect them to want it to be safe. And for a doctor to have admitting privileges at a hospital, it is giving first a check to make sure that that doctor has some standards of medical capabilities, because the doctor's not going to get admitting privileges unless they do. And you can have, for instance, a doctor who's not a licensed OBGYN, which is the case in the Louisiana scenario, one of them is not, who is performing abortions. And by requiring admitting privileges, it begins by requiring a certain level of expertise before they are doing abortions. Second, you often hear about, oh, abortion should be a decision between a doctor and their patient. If these doctors don't have admitting privileges, they're not anything other than somebody who's being hired to do one procedure and that's it. They can't continue on to care for this person. It really isn't what you would think of as a doctor-patient relationship if they're not someone who can continue to care for them. And especially when you get to later-term abortions, you are seeing a higher risk of injury where you need to be able to admit them to the hospital, follow up with the care. And that was some of the evidence that you saw before the Fifth Circuit, that in a couple cases, the doctors had to call 911 and weren't able to go with the patient and follow up on their care. And that was something without the admitting privileges, it is harmful to the women.
And before we let you go, a question kind of about the future of the court in general. If Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg steps down and President Trump nominates Judge Amy Comey Barrett, will the nomination hearing be more heated than the already heated hearings that we witnessed for Justice Kavanaugh?
I think that if Justice Ginsburg or another justice steps down from the court, we are going to see the burning of Atlanta. Just, it is going to be outrageous what happens, whether it is Judge Coney Barrett or another judge that is nominated. It's going to be horrendous. I can't imagine, frankly, President Trump appointing another man, because all it will take is one woman to make a lie up, and it will be something that will be used to delay and to condemn. So I am fully expecting it to be a woman. I think that we have seen nothing like what will happen if another vacancy happens between now and the 2020 election. And it's a very sad state that we're at this stage. And the reason we're at this stage is we've put too much power in five justices.
Margot Cleveland is an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She's adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame. She served 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge and is senior contributor to The Federalist. You can read her columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Margot, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Todd.
When we come back, it's This Week in Pop Christianity. We'll be talking about Christianity for celebrities. Pastor Chris Roseboro, Fighting for the Faith, will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Be Strong and Courageous from Joshua 1:9 is the theme for the 41st academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in his word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us. EMMANUEL Press.us.